Well, good evening. Good to be here again. This is Peter speaking. We're here tonight with Rich, and we got a special guest on our team, Alex, if you'd like to say hi.
Hi, good evening. My name is Alex Andrzejewski.
I'd like to actually start out with a little bad news. For those who don't know, Dr. Dave, his dad passed away today, so our heartfelt sympathies go out there. That's why he's not here today.
But being the trooper that he is, he requested that we still go forward with the show, even though we thought probably the proper thing you would do to be to cancel it. But it meant a lot for him to for us to do the show, so we're carrying on his wishes.
And this one's dedicated to you and your dad. Well, we have an exciting lineup tonight. I guess we got the infamous or infamous John Zaffis coming on, the haunted collector.
Paranormal gangster.
The original Godfather, without the cotton balls in his mouth. And then just our normal, usual rantings of paranormal happenings. So, we got anything up on the big board other than our event coming up in June at the Hulbert House?
Well, let's talk about a couple of things. Let's scale back for a second and go back to the weekend. There was a couple of important events that went on that we'll talk about here. I was in Reading, Pennsylvania, and to everyone in the listening world out there, this is Rich. I was in Reading, Pennsylvania at the Silverton Performing Arts Center where we did an event with Jason Hawes and Steve Gonzalez. There's probably over 1,000 people at the event, and it was incredible. Fans bought a lot of merchandise. They asked a lot of great questions. The presentation that Jason and Steve put on was comical in some parts, which really kind of surprised the audience. But they did go over some really great evidence that I haven't seen on the show before, Pete. Some actual video footage of apparitions and stuff that I've not seen on the show.
Nice.
So it was very insightful. And one question I just want to share with the listening audience, which I thought was kind of interesting, and actually people have asked this to me before. Maybe Alex has heard it, maybe Pete's heard it, but one of the people said, why do you guys investigate at night? So Jason took the question, and there was just a little bit of a pause, but he had two great responses. First of all, he said, most paranormal activity starts between the hours of 8 p.m. and 4 a.m. Mm-hmm. Makes sense, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And the other reason he said is when they do it at night, they can use all the different kinds of camera equipment, IR, as well as full spectrum, to catch evidence. So that's one of the main reasons why they do the paranormal investigations at night. So that was kind of a lot of head nodding in the audience, like, oh, because I think everybody thought, why not do it at 12 o'clock in the afternoon or 2 o'clock in the afternoon? So I thought that was interesting that they shared that. So, but also, you guys were up at Lake George at an event as well.
Yes, Dr. Dave, I, and Diane went up to Lake George for the Parahistory Con. It was a very interesting event. It was a good time. I'll give credit where credit is due. It was very well organized. It went off really well. I was impressed with the pretty much every group that was there. I mean, as different as we all try to be, it's amazing that we all do the same stuff.
I love Lake George, too. I wish I was there.
Pretty area.
We did have a Lakeview room.
Nice.
And the after party apparently was next door to us, which we didn't know. It's almost like we relived it. But
it's off the hook.
But we made a few new connections. We saw some new technology that was out there. And however the planning worked out, they actually set us up next to John Zaffis.
Godfather.
Of the paranormal.
And I should point out they also had some other stars there, like Joe Chin and Adam Berry from Taps, as well as other celebrities.
I met Joe Chin a couple years ago at Jason Hawes' birthday party. Really nice kid. I haven't met Adam. I've not met him yet. I understand Aaron Sagers was there.
Yes. Deftone Pictures. We did a shared presentation with the Tri-County Paranormal out of Petersburg, Virginia.
Awesome.
Where they put a medical flair on their investigating, which I thought was interesting. They take the scientific approach, and they explained how they actually try bringing the conditions of the room down to as close to laboratory conditions as possible.
Very interesting.
And then, you know, Dr. Dave and I get up, and we do our little paranormal cousins thing, and we get everybody laughing, but that's what we're good for.
I heard the ghost tour event went very well, too, according to Diane.
Yes, she's still looking through her evidence. Hopefully she comes up with something.
Fantastic. Well, let's talk about a couple events that are going to be coming up in here in the future for RIP. As everyone knows out there in the listening world, we've been very busy with events. We are involved in a couple big ones. First and foremost, we have our HalbertCon coming up June 28th and 30th at the historic Halbert House in Boonville, New York. If you haven't been to the place, I highly recommend that you check it out. It's an amazing historical place. One thing that's very interesting is the fact that they have all the old ledgers where people would sign in when they would stay, and they actually have ledgers that were signed by General Grant back to the Civil War time. In addition to that, they have an amazing third floor, which looks like it's been untouched since the Civil War. I mean, you walk up in there, it is something out of a creepy old horror movie. I mean, the dolls alone are...
I was actually showing people pictures of the dolls up at Lake George, and I think that alone sold a few tickets.
And our guest tonight definitely knows something about dolls, John Zaffis, and he even gets creeped out by going up there on the third floor. But there's just things up there. There's memorabilia, there's furniture and things up there that date way, way back. And it's interesting because it's as if time stopped and then somebody discovered it, opened the door, and there it was 200 years later.
What year was the Halbert House built?
1812 to 1819, but we believe there was a tavern that was built before that dating into the 1700s. If I could, Rich, let me give you a quick little story to share with the audience here.
Absolutely.
The Halbert House, as many people may know, that did air on Haunted Collector on an episode. And like Rich is saying, the third floor is pretty much untouched as it's been since the people that lived there and actually died there. This lady was watching the episode, and I guess she recognized pictures of her father and actually a letter that she had sent to him in the 60s.
Oh, this is right. I heard about this.
And then she came up for her last event for a tour and took back all of the equipment or the letters and memorabilia. So that was an interesting story, reuniting a family member with their long-lost memorabilia.
What are the chances of that happening? I mean, that is just so extremely rare. I mean, that blows my mind that she caught that in the TV screen and then came to our event afterwards. The feedback we got when we did our event at Halbert House last year, Pete, was, I mean, first of all, we sold it out. And
yes,
we turned away about 75 to 80 people the night of the event.
Mm-hmm.
But the feedback that we got is that the event was so well organized with the ghost hunt. The presentation that John Zaffis did was epic. I mean, he touched upon the whole demonology subject matter, which in itself is extremely creepy, as well as the pre-presentation, if you will, that RIP did, which everyone found very informative. But the other thing I think is that the people who attended the event found out in the meet and greet, as well as interacting with RIP and John Zaffis, that we're fun. Who would have knew?
No, we're not.
Going back to that family member, didn't the family attend that event? Or weren't they supposed to attend the event?
Yes, I believe they took the tour and did a few other things, but didn't stay for the investigation. And I can't really blame them.
I don't blame either.
The paranormal's not for everybody, I mean.
No, it's definitely not. What's also interesting about that is when the Halbert House appeared on Haunted Collector, the one room in the very, very back in the third floor, the infamous room where the door slammed on me, it's actually happened to me twice, was actually a room where the door slammed on John, and that's actually where they found, what is it called, a garrote?
A garrote, yes.
Garrote. They found up in the corner of the ceiling in the wall, which is just possibly suspected as it being a murder weapon. So that was just kind of interesting that one room had so much activity when we investigated it before the show aired.
And I always get an uneasy feeling in that area, too. And it's not just the dolls.
You feel like you're being watched a lot. That's one thing I've noticed in the place. Even on the second floor, all the hotel rooms are. You really feel like you're walking down there. You're doing a left and a right just to check because you feel like somebody's right behind you.
And I know the first time we went there, we were setting up the laser grid room 24. We saw the shadow go through the grid. Of course, we didn't have the camera set up yet, but...
Never fails, does it?
Really, we've been there about, a good 20 times, and every time we've been there, we've gotten some type of evidence.
It's a very active place.
Mm-hmm.
Even after the investigation and the Haunted Collector crew removed the item that had the negative energy attached, there's just so many other souls and so much other energy in there. Not necessarily on a negative aspect, but when you go in there, there's still just so much activity that goes on in there.
So, I mean, if you're looking for a good time, I mean, this year we've expanded it. We're going to have lectures. We're going to have actual vendors there selling goods. So if nothing else, come out and show a little support to the Boonville community.
Oh, absolutely. As far as meals, we're going to have a pancake breakfast Saturday morning.
Ooh, I love pancakes.
There you go. A buffet lunch. We're going to have workshops throughout the day on the paranormal, so people who want to learn about the paranormal. Or if you're going to attend the event and you feel that you have some information that you could cover that would be of a benefit to the people in the community regarding the paranormal, please consult with us on Facebook, and possibly we could have you do one of the sessions with us. Also, John Zaffis is going to do a presentation on his techniques in ghost hunting, which I'm dying to see, because here's a gentleman who's, I mean, the master, if you will. You got to remember, folks, that since Ghost Hunters premiered so many years ago, ghost hunting and paranormal investigators now are like a celebrity thing. So everyone started to get into it. So it was like a cool thing to do. It's an accepted thing. But back when John was doing it, they view people as freaks. They're like, what are you doing running around these haunted houses? There's no such things as ghosts. You're crazy. You're out of your mind. So there was a whole different perspective on it back then.
Sounds familiar.
Definitely.
So you really have to admire the pioneers who really started this whole thing when it wasn't popular, when there was no gratification or exposure on this, and there was no TV shows that were going to be offered to people. And that's kind of where, you know, John Zaffis came from. And we'll pick his brain a little bit more later on when he comes on.
You said John was doing this for 36 years?
Actually, over 36 years. So we can get a count on him when he comes on the air. But, I mean, you got to remember, he studied with the Warrens, his aunt and uncle.
Correct.
So, I
correct.
Mean, they're probably...
Amityville Horror, fame,
et
cetera.
Yeah, and we're gonna talk about some of his cases and some of the television shows that he's done, as well as Haunted Collector and some of the things that regarding his museum is too as well. But for a quick second, I want to talk about one more event that kind of slipped through before we move on. Let's talk a little bit about ScareCon. ScareCon is a horror sci-fi fan convention that's going to be held September 12th to the 15th. And it's going to be at the Turning Stone Casino Resort, which is in Verona, New York. Now, if you haven't been one of these, this is very similar to like a Comic-Con. And whereas a lot of people who are interested in the paranormal, interested in horror, sci-fi, get together, we've got a lot of celebrity people coming in, celebrity guests that you can meet and get signed autographs. We've got Linda Blair coming from The Exorcist. We've got Ernie Hudson coming from Ghostbusters and so many more. You can go to scarecon.com to get the update. But again, folks, it's September 12th through the 15th at the Turning Stone Casino. Tickets are on sale on the website. And it costs more for two people to go to a movie and get popcorn than it is to spend a weekend at ScareCon. So why would you miss this? We've got horror movie reviews. We've got premieres of horror movies. We've got parties. We've got award ceremony. All kinds of cool stuff going on. So definitely make sure that you come by.
Did I see the website correctly that they have Eddie Munster?
Eddie Munster.
Was it Cousin It from the Addams Family?
Yes, you are correct.
Of course, I also saw the Scream Queens that were on there,
yes.
Which is why I go. But
I went for the Batmobile last year. The original Batmobile was on display.
Yes.
And I believe it's coming back again, Alex, so you're in luck. So we'd like to thank Alex for being here tonight with us. This is his first time being on the show with us, and we appreciate him filling in last minute for Dave. So Alex has been with us for about how long now you've been with the group?
About a year and a half now.
Okay, about a year and a half.
We haven't scared you off yet.
Not yet. You guys are working on it.
Must be doing something right.
He's been working through the ranks. And here at RIP, we have a process when we bring people on board as paranormal investigators. We obviously have some screening processes involved. We have them go on investigations to see how they're going to interact with the team, see what skill set they can bring to people. And Alex fit in very well. He's very technical savvy, as well as very informative and subject matter of history and things like that. So he was a great addition to our group. So we're very fortunate to have him.
And if we could, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll see if our guest is available. If not, we'll find something for you to listen to.
Stay tuned.
And the phone lines are open in the U.S. and Canada, 1-888-429-5471. Again, 1-888-429-5471 if you'd like to pick our brain or the great John Zaffis. We did get an actual request via email. Someone asked me, what is the difference between a Class A EVP and everything else? Usually a Class A EVP is something that you can easily recognize without the aid of any enhancements. And if you'd like, I'm going to play you a quick clip of one of our scary ones from a location we've frequented. So let us play this for you.
Anyone here who wishes to communicate with us?
That was pretty clear. I was up in the balcony of a church, alone by myself, asking, is anybody here? There were actually no female investigators with us that night, and you can hear a female voice there saying, nobody.
Yeah, that sent chills down my spine. That was creepy. Class A creepy.
Class A creepy.
Okay, so I guess Mr. Zaffis has called in. We're going to go live with John right now.
John, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, guys.
Hey, welcome to the show.
Good
thanks,
to have
you. Thanks for having me on.
Okay, since we got you on the show, you got to let me at least do a formal introduction of you. I mean, I printed out all these notes, and you know, I'm going to go with the standard format introduction versus giving the audience my personal introduction of you, which I'm sure you'll appreciate.
So,
ladies and gentlemen, tonight's guest is John Zaffis. He has over 36 years of experience studying and investigating the paranormal. And for those of you who may not know, he's had the opportunity to work for his aunt and uncle, Ed and Lorraine Warren, who are two very famous paranormal investigators in their own. He's also done a lot not only with ghosts and hauntings, but also ventured into the study of demonology under the Warrens. And this led John's involvement with cases of possession, exorcism, and working with prominent exorcists in the field. His research has taken him throughout the United States, Canada, England, and Scotland, covering several thousands of cases. Through hands-on investigating with other investigators and clergy, he's obtained a great deal of knowledge and understanding of the paranormal and is considered one of the foremost authorities in the field today. Ladies and gentlemen, John Zaffis. Welcome.
Well, thank you.
John's almost out of speechless on that introduction.
Yeah, he's probably not used to me using such vocabulary and pronouncing words correctly, so that threw him off a little bit. So, John, we're all fans of Haunted Collector, big fans of Haunted Collector, as you know, and I've got Pete here with me, as you know, Pete.
And hi, John.
Hey, buddy.
And we also have a associate member, Alex, who's joining the ranks here and filling in for Dave. I don't know if you, have you met John before, Alex?
Yes, we did at the Holbert House and at another event.
Awesome.
I actually carried John's bags. He probably remembers that.
John, I guess a few people wanted to know, which is a question we hear all the time, do you believe in this paranormal stuff? Which I'm pretty sure we know the answer.
Well, yeah, I definitely believe in it. You know, it's a concept of looking at things so differently today compared to, you know, 41 years ago when I started getting involved with this. Today we have a lot of equipment out there. We have a lot more people that are interested in the field. And the bottom line, and at the end of the day, what are we all trying to achieve? What are we trying to do is try and figure out exactly what we're dealing with. We have a lot of theories, a lot of different belief systems, and, you know, a lot of people trying to prove things out from, you know, a scientific approach. But again, looking at this, the key thing is we deal with a spiritual realm, and I do feel very confident. And I'm very much for incorporating, bringing all the equipment in and integrating all the different things to try and get those answers that, you know, all of us are out there looking for.
Now, John, you started doing this a long time ago. You're actually one of the pioneers in this field. I mean, since the whole boom of the TV show Ghost Hunters, we see all these paranormal teams cropping up all over the place, and we see all these people buying all this high-tech equipment and doing all these investigations. And, you know, it's kind of like a little status thing now to be in a ghost hunting organization, to be a paranormal investigator, if you will. But actually going back when you started, it was kind of like, you know, frowned upon. People were like, kind of looked at you like weird, like, what are you talking about, ghosts? And you didn't have all this modern technology that, you know, that we take for granted when we use investigating. You had to rely a lot on instincts and history and old school methods.
Unfortunately, I can barely hear you guys.
Oh, you still with us?
Yeah, but I could barely hear what you were just asking.
How about now? I was saying, if you can still hear me now, that essentially when you started doing the paranormal investigating years ago, before we had all this high-tech gear that we used doing the investigation, and of course it's kind of like a celebrity thing now to like be a ghost hunter since, you know, the whole premiere of the TV show Ghost Hunters. But you used to do it back when instincts and history and you know, were the primary things that you relied upon when you did an investigation to get evidence.
Well, again, too, that's why it's very important to remember when investigating is that, you know, a lot of times people say, I didn't get any evidence to be able to substantiate an investigation. You can't always rely solely on EVPs or a photograph or, you know, getting a cold spot or a hot spot. You gotta remember, too, when dealing with this, a lot of times energies come in and out of locations, and sometimes you could be in there investigating and not have anything occur or happen. Then you have to take a step back and look at the way we used to do it in the old traditional ways. We just have basic equipment. And, you know, even today, too, people amaze me by when they'll make a remark to me. They go, well, do you work with psychics and mediums? Yes, I always have and always will. Again, you have to take information from a wide variety of sources and bring all that and see if anything is going to be applying. You know, a key factor a lot of times people have to remember when dealing with, you know, psychics or mediums, you know, a lot of times they're just rambling, they throw out a lot of different information. It's because, here again, a lot of times some of that information might apply to that particular haunting or case that you're working on, or it might have something to do with an individual in the room, or, you know, different things do tie in. So I still believe very strongly in taking all resources when working with somebody that, you know, can pick up or psych on something in a location, or EVPs, photographs. There's a large variety of things that I look at today that, you know, do help us. But again, I still stick to the basics, because to me, I find that's where a lot of times we get the best results.
Of all the equipment used there in ghost hunting and investigating, which piece of equipment have you used or do you most use the most frequent that you find the most useful?
That would be a tape recorder. EVPs are something that, for some reason or another, I still don't quite understand all of it, but I could turn a tape recorder on and a lot of times something will end up getting captured pretty quickly. And it's still something that I rely upon very much, and that's being within the vicinity of where tape recorders are and hopefully being able to capture something.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because some people I've investigated with can get EVPs and some can't. Do you think that the person who's asking the questions has something to do with the generation of the EVPs?
Absolutely. We have a variety of circumstances and different people that can be doing an EVP session and trying to capture something. And there are individuals that do seem to get more EVPs. I mean, dealing in that arena, if you will, that I've seen this time and time again over the course of years where certain people will ask questions, they'll get answers. Other people will be holding the recorders, they'll get answers. And then I've been with people asking and holding their tape recorders and they get absolutely nothing. So again, I think a lot of times when we deal with the spirit in these homes, they're attracted to certain types of individuals, and that's why they get more information than somebody else will.
I don't get them a lot because half the time I look at my auto recorder, it's flashing, which means it's on pause and not record. So that's my hang-up.
Or battery drain.
Well, it's always that way, buddy. When there's anything good going on, or a lot of times when you got something unique that happens, same thing. You just take a, you go, oh, I hope I captured that, and you realize you didn't even have the equipment on.
Well, we do that a lot with video stuff. We see some great stuff, and we're like, oh, my God, we had this experience, but we forgot to turn on the video recorder, or we forgot to charge the battery.
Or it's pointing the wrong way.
Or the pause button's down. So, yeah, we're very familiar with that.
I wish we would have got the handprint on my back with the thermal camera. That would have been.
That was extremely interesting. That sort of blew my mind. What is your take on orbs? You know, I mean, that's one question. Since we've been doing this radio show, which hasn't been a long time, this is actually our third edition, but people are always asking us about orbs. What's your take on it, John?
The majority of the time when you look at any of these photographs or anything that we deal with, people call them orbs and globules and all different things. Again, the majority of the time you could be dealing with dust or moisture or bugs. But what I do find interesting with the orbs, you know, if you're dealing with something and it's reacting or it's doing something that's reacting to a question or reacting to a command or anything like that, the way I interpret a lot of that, do I think these individual orbs could be ghosts? No. But I do believe very much in energy. And is it a possibility that, you know, these orbs or globules, some of them might be, you know, energy we're dealing with? Yeah, it's something, you know, we're just touching the surface. We're trying to understand some of that, how it, you know, reacts to commands and different things like that. But, you know, I look at that from the perspective that we do deal with certain types of energy, and we're really not quite sure a lot of times how things can manifest or how they come to us. So I do look at it, I do understand it, but in all honesty, the majority of the time it's just dust or moisture.
Well, that's what we try to tell people. A lot of times we'll get photographs sent to us. As a matter of fact, I just got one the other day from some lady who took a snapshot inside the Halbert House. She said, I think I've captured a ghost. And pretty much it was a reflection of the flash with some orbs, which I'm pretty sure was dust or water droplets. But, I mean, that's the first thing that people think anytime they see that in their pictures, that it's a ghost. What are your views on orbs, Pete?
I don't like them. No, actually, growing up in my house, I actually was knocked over. I fell backwards by an orb. But the thing was about the size of a bowling ball, and it was a solid yellow color. So, I mean, to me, that's an actual orb versus things that are in pictures. I physically saw it.
That's like an orb on steroids, man. John, the show Haunted Collector, I know a lot of people that I talk to know you from the TV show Haunted Collector, and when we did our event last year, a lot of people came in and said, oh, my God, I want to meet the guy from Haunted Collector. But actually, I want to go back a little bit, because when I first learned of you and I started looking at your work and some of your television stuff, there was a documentary that Carmen Reed sent me. It was called A Haunting in Connecticut. And she sent me, like, the director's cut of this documentary. Now normally documentaries are interesting, to say the least, but they're not supposed to really be creepy. And this had to be, like, one of the creepiest documentaries I've ever seen. As a matter of fact, you are actually in it with the Warrens in this case. And this is actually the documentary that inspired the movie The Haunting in Connecticut, which came out a couple years back, which is the whole Carmen Reed, Carmen Snooker story. Can you tell us a little bit about that, John?
The Haunting in Connecticut basically was a case in Southington, Connecticut. Family had moved into an old funeral parlor. And, you know, here again, we went in to just do a regular investigation and ended up spending 9.5 weeks, you know, in there researching it with Ed and Lorraine Warren and several other people. And it turned into probably being one of those types of cases from a 1 to 10 that is really up there on the scale. And experiencing some of that stuff in there, because it's 25 years ago now, was substantial as far as what I've experienced in the years. that I dealt with the paranormal activity, realizing, you know, that this house had the intensity and the magnitude of what we call, you know, demonic activity that was transpiring in there. I mean, with that case, there really wasn't anybody that didn't get affected as far as every researcher. There were three different Roman Catholic priests involved with that. They were severely affected by that. And, you know, one evening, as I was sitting down at the dining room table and just jotting down a few notes from events, you know, something transpired. The things were going on. Everybody went to bed. And it got very cold in the house, and it was the month of August. Got up, went and looked up, you know, I'm in the hallway and everything. There was a very foul smell and stuff. Looked up the staircase and seen, you know, something that started pulling together, and it started forming up at the top of the stairs and came down the stairs. And it was a pretty horrific event for me in that point in time. And the only thing I could ever think of at that point, and I remember this, I kind of wish they would have left it in the documentary about the case, is that, you know, at that point, the only thing I could think of was to get my keys, and that was to get the hell out of the house. I tripped over a coffee table. I was screaming, yelling, swearing, and everything at that point in time. Everybody was waking up, and I stayed away from the case for 3 days. But I did go back, and it was a very big turning point. Now, the reason I say it was a very big turning point is that I wouldn't accept telephone calls from anybody, but we had a very good friend in the family, and he was a bishop, and he had called, and, you know, he said, you're not talking to anybody. Nobody knows exactly what happened. So I explained everything to him, and he got very quiet at that point. He just said to me, he goes, well, then you're going to let it win if you don't, you know, get back involved with this. And I go, well, what do you mean about that? He goes, it scared you enough, presented itself to you that way to scare you enough so that you would not want to do this anymore. And he goes, you give up doing this and this type of work. He says, you basically gave in. You let it win. Well, Rich, you know me well enough. You do not throw a challenge to me.
No,
I've always
sir.
Been that way, and I'm never going to change. And I thought about that, and he was correct, and he was right. And 3 days later, I did go back into Carmen's home. And I'm very honest and open about it. Was I scared? Hell yeah. Because these are types of situations you never forget about them. They affect you the rest of your life. And it was one of those types of situations I couldn't wait till that case was over with. And we knew shortly after that that the exorcism was sanctioned. Everything was being put into play. And the exorcism was performed in that home. And it was very successful. But those are monumental type things that happen in your career with dealing with paranormal activity and things that occur. You know, you take that step back and you just look at these things, and it makes you think there's so much out there that we just don't quite understand or comprehend. And that's probably one of the driving forces with me. And it's one of those things that you take a look at. But today, it's very scary in the paranormal field and the realm out there, because we have a lot of people that watch the TV shows and, you know, watch these things, and right away they throw up a web page and they're out there investigating. And it's a type of field that's no different than anything else out there. You want to learn to be, you know, a doctor, a lawyer. You want to learn to do anything. You have to study it. You have to learn it. You have to mentor with people to be able to get a good understanding of what it is you are dealing with, whether you believe in it or not, because there's so much that needs to be taken into consideration when getting involved with going into, you know, a home, and you're dealing with a distressed family and children. So there's a lot that goes into this, and it's very scary today to watch some of the things that are occurring and happening out there.
Well, I've known you for a number of years, and I can tell the listening audience this. You don't intimidate easy. And for you to leave that case under those circumstances and to consider not coming back into the field, I can only imagine what you saw was horrific.
Well, it was funny because it's funny now, because it was, I didn't even realize what was going on at that point in time. And they were interviewing my wife last year, and I was sitting listening to what she was explaining and what she was saying, you know, during the course of that interview, and she was expressing what her concern was, because I always do not come home and talk about the things I was involved with. But she said for several nights, she said, I just kept shaking and tossing and turning. And she said that bothered her tremendously. She knew whatever affected me or whatever had happened had to be pretty dramatic. And she was going back and forth, and she said that was one of the points where she realized that there was so much that goes on that I do not talk about or I don't share, that she felt that it was better off she didn't know, because at that point she would have probably told me, I don't want you doing it anymore, and she knew that was a waste of breath because I'd go out and still do it anyways. But again, you know, you listen to some of these things and not knowing what was transpiring from somebody else looking in from what I was experiencing. So it was, you know, again, one of those types of points where it was something that rattled me that much where, you know, I was trying to make a decision on what I wanted to do.
Yeah, that's, I got to tell you, would you consider that whole investigation, that whole case, one of the most horrific ones that you've ever done?
It's up there. It's definitely, as far as infestation in the home, which something that was more focused just, you know, on the building per se, it's still one of those key cases that's way up there on the charts as far as, you know, what I dealt with in my career.
Yeah, because there's so many different cases that you've been involved in, and I know that's one that you personally talked to me on several occasions about. What sort of led you into the museum? Where did that kind of come from? The museum of the paranormal museum of objects. How did this come about?
I've always, you know, haunted items have always been around. It's nothing new. I mean, you know, there's been books written on it, and you know, things have been around for many, many years that have energy attached to them, and years and years and years ago, you know, doing an investigation, a woman collected these particular little types of statues. She picked one up and she added it to a collection, and she'd walk back in the room, it would be moved, and it was in different locations. So it really creeped her out and scared her, and she wanted nothing to do with it. And I ended up removing it that day. And that's what really started me thinking and realizing